I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hear elevated conversation on crucial issues. Boyd Matheson on Inside Sources.
Welcome back. Final segment of Inside Sources. Great to be with you today. As always, I am Boyd Matheson. As we round out the week, I want to go back to the conversation I had yesterday with legendary Washington Post columnist George Will. And many of you chimed in that his unique perspective on so many things, even just his word choice, is worth listening to for a long time. It definitely elevates your IQ and your vocabulary as you talk to George Will. And in the conversation we had yesterday, I asked Mr. Will a number of things, and he had written recently in the Washington Post about an incident that many of us have heard about at Stanford Law School. They had invited a guest, an appellate judge. The judge was shouted down by protesters that didn't like this particular judge being on campus. The dean of the law school did not behave like a real leader in terms of ensuring that free speech could happen on Stanford campus. And so I asked Mr. Will about what he saw play out and had him give us some thoughts about the students, the school, the state of academia. Here's what he had to say.
I'm so depressed by what's happening in academia. My father was a professor. I briefly was before sinking to journalism, as my father put it. It took us 800 years to evolve through political and ecclesiastical thickets. The great research universities that are the really ornaments of our society and civilization. You can kick it all away in a generation. When you get students who don't know why they're there and who think their job at university is to change the world, you have faculty who are the descendants now of the 60s radicals who went to Earth on campus at the end of the 60s, got tenure, and have been replacing them with like-minded people ever since. Our universities are about to become unrecognizable as universities. Because what characterizes a university above all else is the freedom of thought, expression, curiosity. And all three are now endangered. A lot of them don't think they have anything to learn. Oh, sure, they want to learn contract law and antitrust and all the rest of the law school curriculum. But in the basic fact of life, they don't think they have anything to learn about virtue, about morality, about citizenship. They've got all the answers because they've been told since they were about 10 years old that they're special, that they're flawless, that the world is lucky to have them. And they bring this moral vanity that was instilled in them, not only at home by their overprotective and overpraising parents, but they learned it in 4 years on college campuses, where they were told that all the world contiguous to the campus is unregenerate, that campuses are little islands of enlightenment in an ocean of darkness, and their job is to bring to the world, the darkened world, the light of their understanding. It's a horrible exercise in moral vanity that disposes people not to learn anything because they think they know everything.
I then asked Mr. Will what the antidote is for this kind of moral vanity that kills our curiosity. He described it this way.
Well, first you need good college presidents. I'm struck by how much damage weak college presidents can do. The president of Yale is a good example. So many college presidents today are frightened of their faculty. They're frightened of their students. They're frightened of this enormous bureaucracy that has now enveloped higher education. There are now more administrators than there are teachers on our college campuses.
Wow.
So first you have to stop the bureaucratization. Then you have to get university presidents who have spines of steel and willing to defend the institution. Then you have to have some clear parameters of what the rules are and what the consequences are for breaking the rules. What Stanford should do, it's perfectly easy to do this, identify as many as possible of the students who simply shouted down a federal appellate judge and tell them it goes on their record. These are law students, and that when major law firms come around recruiting, hand to the recruiters a list of the students who behave this way. That'd be the end of that behavior.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's amazing what happens when you have consequences for bad behavior and you reward good behavior. It always seems to work out. But to me, it's so important what Mr. Will said in terms of keeping that curiosity of constantly learning, being willing to be taught, not feeling like you have all the answers already, I think is important, not just on our college campuses, but all over the planet and especially across the country. And then finally today, I want to go to part of my conversation with Mr. Will that we looked a little behind the scenes. Here's someone who has been writing for decades, been making appearances on television for decades, has been magazine and books. This is someone who writes a lot and thinks a lot. And I wanted to get some perspective in terms of how he goes about that. This is George Will. Take a listen.
Well, first of all, I love to write. A lot of writers don't like to write. They like hanging about in the journalistic culture. And they like the end product, seeing their name in print. But that stuff in the middle, we actually have to put sentences and paragraphs together, they find agonizing. I'd rather write than eat. There's nothing gives me greater pleasure than putting together a good paragraph. So first of all, you have to like it. Second, you have to be stimulated by a lot of things. Anyone can write. Any damn fool can write, and a lot of damn fools do write. 750 words twice a week on how stupid Donald Trump is or something like that. I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
I think a good columnist should write a third to half his columns on topics that aren't not just on the front page of the New York Times and not even in the New York Times. They are other aspects, law cases, civil liberties, deprivations, good books, all kinds of things. The reading a syndicated column is the most optional thing in the world. No one has to do it. You got to read the front page. You got to read the sports pages because that's where virtue and merit are actually rewarded and illustrated. But reading a syndicated column is optional. So you better tell people something it's a pleasure for them to learn that they didn't know. So I have people always ask a columnist. I now know this to be the most frequently asked column question because I asked it of Bill Buckley when I started. I asked Bill Buckley, I said, how do you come up with things to write about? And he said, the world irritates me three times a week. And the world stimulates my interest and curiosity 10 times a week.
Yeah.
I've always had for years now in my wallet a little card with a list of topics I hope to get to. I've got probably 15 on there now.
I love that.
And I won't get to them in 15 columns because the news keeps interrupting me.
That is the great George Will. Pleasure having him on the program yesterday. And so many things in there. Stay curious. Write. Everybody should be a writer. And what we think about actually matters in the end. And if we can get to that point, we can change a whole lot of conversations in this country. Well, thanks for joining us on Inside Sources today here on KSL News Radio. And as always, as you go out into the world, make sure you see something that inspires, say something that uplifts, and do something that makes a difference.
KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City. Listen on the KSL News Radio app and in your car at 102.7 FM. KSL News Radio, Utah's all-day companion for news.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.